say, no, reason can't find God, because Paul and reason can find nothing except the aspects of the fall. Only papists take God on his terms, by his revelation, as he is saved by Jesus Christ, can he find God, because then he finds you. Faith has the knowledge of that which it takes. And it's faith is the evidence of the things it takes. If it's faith in the unseen, it's the evidence of the things unseen, as Hebrews 11:1 says. And when you take him by faith, you have him. Then you find him because he found you. If you had all the time, yet you just hadn't found out, that's all. He found you from the beginning. Wherefore hidest thou thy face and holdest me thy enemy? This block of coming between of law and judgment and the mistaken concept of God. So God's face must be hidden, because God is not law, law's grace. So if you see God with law, he sees his face. And not to be just God's not so, the more you say is they've never seen God, because they've always seen law, and because long he's in this glass of death. And that's not God. And the God that is a false concept of the God, which is by some silly fussing up in the platform and some songs or something, they think that's God. That's not God. God's here, not there. You don't find God by hearing something about God. You find God by knowing his time and therefore being the following thing. And why do you hide your face? Why have you hidden your face? It cries out in 23. If you look at a famous statement. Verse 3. Then he inquired this, and God listened, or if I know where I might find him, that I might come even to his seat. That's the real half cry of everybody if they admit it. The whole world, because the world, of course, is for me indeed, and therefore they're lost by the earth away from him. Oh, I know where I might find him, and I might come even to his seat. And in the same one, the search which comes this end can't find. It's faith finds, it takes that. The search can't find. In no condition you to take faith, but you can't find. And so it goes on here. In verses 8 and 9 of that same chapter, behold, I go forward, he's not there, and back then accomplishes him. And the left hand does doing that work, I can't behold him. He hides himself on the right hand, I can't see him. Is that a statement? Apart from God. Probably you all have to go through this in order to transcend it in faith. But what a statement. Behold, I go forward, he's not there. Go backward, accomplishes him. Left hand, there he works, confound him, can't behold him. How did you shuffle the right hand? I can't see him. But nowhere am I found him. 28. 12. Where shall wisdom be found? And where is the perfect understanding? He knows it's on beyond. It's a very beautiful, perfect statement, this one. This is a statement where he says, in verse 7, there's a path which no power knoweth. There's a very thin little that one. Which the righteous eye has not seen. The highest, he has the clearest sight. There's a path which no fire knoweth, verse 7. Which the righteous eye has not seen. The liar's weapon is not sudden it, nor the fierce lion passed by it. But where shall this wisdom be found? Where is the place of understanding? Man knoweth not the price thereof. There is a kind of land of Eve, living. The depth treasures that in me. The sea treasures that in me. Can't be got the gold, that is simply the way to pass thereof. Can't be guided by the gold away from okay. No mention of the coral and pearls. Whence, verse 20, whence then cometh wisdom? And there's the place I'm saying. What a statement is it? What a statement. Can't be found here, can't be found there. Where is it? It's there all the time, not only by the freedom of the choice of faith, not by finding. That by accepting and recognizing. Now, and this is perhaps the last we say now, there are one of the great leaps in Job. Job knew the truth. It flashes out like a beacon. Because he knew it. There is no sign that these other men knew had this light. So I don't think they did. They may have had some faith relationship with God, but Job had a knowledge relationship. Not a faith one. And sometimes you just burst out of him. There are two famous statements which you burst out of him. The first is in 23:10. Suddenly he says this. This is where he can confound him. Same chapter, he can confound him. I reversed that in a sense. Lovely, verse 10. He knows the way that I take. When he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. That's lovely. He knows the way. When he has tried me, I'll come forth as gold. That's faith. Then he took a gun, two steps farther. One, a very big one. In 13:15, he made the most famous statement in his book, which is a wonderful statement. It's still a gritted teeth statement. It's not a liberated statement. It's a wonderful statement. But it has the element of negative in it. So if a teeth has that level, it's a gritted teeth. I hold on. So he didn't hold on. He didn't hold on to enjoy it. It's the other side. It's got you. And this is the famous statement. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. If I can't even maintain my own labor for him. You didn't know that one. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. That's his first thing. Comes out there. And finally, that kind of goes, come as gold. Though he slay me, I trust him. Now there's a negative there, and a kind of, well, I may be slain. Not that might be some purpose of glory to slay. But it's you, if I thousand, aggressively used. Oh, tens, I say millions have stood their ground on this Christian statement. But the whole book is worth the whole statement. So he's saying, yet will I trust him. That's the human side of faith. The divine side of faith is the substance that comes to you. Now that substance came marvelously soon in a marvelous statement. And this man, perhaps the first book written in the Bible. And that's it in chapter 23, verse 10. Am I right? No, no, sorry, I did you wrong one. It's 1923. No, yes. No, I looked at it. It is 1923. Burned out of it. All of my words are now written. He suddenly lifts back about all this stuff. All that they were put in the book, and they were graven in iron pen, and lead, a pen and lead in the rock forever. For I know that I will deal with it. And then he goes on. He not only says he's here now, but he said, come up, come back. He's the first statement that is the left statement of the second coming of the Bible. He shall stand in the latter day on the earth. And there's your father, and he says, I'm going to have a resurrection body. Isn't it fantastic? This is the original translation. I think the tried Christians have been telling me our translation in verse 26. Though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh I shall see God. Obviously, the new flesh. Whom I shall see for myself, person to person, and my eyes shall behold, and not another. Isn't that wonderful? What's it? After all this apparent darkness, this man had light, of course. See these again? For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and I know that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And even though this body is corrupting, yet in my flesh shall I see him. And I can't see him some day, but I shall see him face to face. See him for myself and my eyes at the home. And then he said a lovely thing. He caught it. Lovely thing. Kern doesn't mention others. But you should say, what you should say is, why persecute him, seeing the root of the matter is found in me? You know what I mean? So why don't you say, what are you persecuting that fellow for? The root of the matter is in him. You should say, here's the root of the matter. I have my God, I have my Redeemer. I am in this redeemed relationship. It's here and going to come to pass. And I throw out this word of joy. This is word of joy, not word of gritted teeth, but word of real life faith. So right in the middle of this great black child. Now that's the end of the interchange that took place between Job, the three friends, and talking with God. God's not just talking back to him. Talking with God, making questions with God, finding his way. And you see, he had the way, but because it wasn't confirmed in him yet, he slipped up. And he moved into a legal controversy, which he wouldn't have moved into if he saw the way, because he really wouldn't see the law. He saw the way, he said, what does the God do? They said, no, God. They aren't there to you. The fact that he responded to the law means he hadn't quite got it yet. And a certain element in which he saw things under the law level, which is the self level. I should be this, and should be that, and God punishes and all that. And so he had to listen to a permanent level where this law stuff had disappeared, and had listened to other things to him. So it was necessary to go through this controversy, attempts at justification, and then questioning about himself and trying to find God, and so on, in these flashes of witness. We haven't finished this morning, I thought we might. Well, that's all I'll say. But, this evening we finish David. Not that that would take a great deal of time, there are a few things. We've done, in some ways, the major parts of David that they wish to look into. That's all. So again, tomorrow, this evening may be fairly short, I don't know. Where are we? All right. So, where are we going? Okay. Have the intervention of Elihu. Before the direct word came from God to Job. You know nothing about Elihu, except he was a young man and had something very strongly on his heart to say to Job and his three friends. And they form a little bit of a preparation for what the final word is to be, direct from God. Elihu's talk recorded is from chapter 32 through 37. He was a modest young fellow, because he said that he'd sat with him and had been quite stirred by the give and take between both on the part of both the friends and Job, that he'd waited to speak until the hour was spoken because they were older than he. He says that or it says that when they had no more to say, they did have no more to say after Job had given his final opening up in his past life, which is so enormous in person, which we saw him live this morning, the kind of life he lived in his previous days. Apparently they shut their mouths. They thought, what more could they say in a man who lives a life like that? Anyhow, they didn't say anymore. Job couldn't seem to wish to add to it. So now Elihu stepped in. I like that. He wasn't pushful, he wasn't making sure he knew better than other people. But he did say he had a strong sense of urge to speak. He spoke of it in the 8th verse as a spiritual man and the inspiration of the Almighty gives understanding. He said he had some further understanding to give. And he was burning in him to pass it on. And he made a little pertinent remark for his elders. Great men are not always wise, neither do the aged understand their judgment, which is a wang for them. And so he, now quite modestly, asked him to listen to what he had to say, and I think it was acceptable to him because he had this modest approach. He spoke of himself as being full of matter. The spirit is constraining him. That's good. The person should want to say something. That's in the 18th verse of the 32nd chapter. What he did say was a really a rebuke both to the friends and to Job. He spoke from quite plainly to the friends and adequately. So he said he was disturbed about the three friends in the third verse of the second chapter, the 32nd chapter, because they have found no answer and yet are condemned again. That's very good. That about sizes it up. That's what stuff ourselves when pulling other people down. They found no answer and yet are condemned them. They didn't replace what they said by an adequate satisfactory alternative. And that's what they was. Of course, thank God, we do agree with the alternative. That's why we see we've got something to say. And emphasis in all our talk should be, if we do touch the negative, or is it we're presenting the alternative, we replace with other negative by the positive. He said in Job, he said straight out that he wanted to speak because he's righteous in his own eyes. And I said, I don't know that's wholly fair to what Job said. He kept saying that the real righteousness of Job was not to be attributed to Job in his self-righteous way. In the product of his relationship to God through grace and the Spirit, that is true too. And he started to say that. And I think all the things he said all the way through, the attitude he had, proves that, but that Satan he couldn't touch. That he had a fixed inner consciousness that God was working his ways out. He was God's man, and all he came through was God's will. But he had got disturbed from that by these discussions. However, it appeared to, like that to Elihu, that he was righteous in his own eyes, and there was some truth in it. He repeated the, that's the same thing, in the 33rd chapter, as Job had spoken in his hearing, he said, and if his words had been what Job was supposed to say, I'm clean without transgression, I'm innocent, now there is iniquity in me. I assume that that's fairly true. The fellow's outward sins, but on the other hand, he did say he had a sin before God. And no man could say he was justified before God. Elijah seemed to pass that over, so I think the other was the major Depends. Joe will raise him if he doesn't. Okay, righteous. Complaining against God, so a lot of the questions are saying, behold, Job saying, he finds occasion against me. He comes to me as an enemy, pushes my feet in stocks, marketeth all my paths. He quoted that as being a general attitude of Job, questioning and even murmuring against God, as well as defending himself against the accusations of being a sinner by his friends. Now the one answer that Elihu did give, which I think in one sense is what he was right to say and the right thing. He just says this, behold, in this, verse 12, in this thou art not just, I answer thee that God is greater than man. That's about it. So I think Elihu did have a clear word there. God is greater than man. So if you're what are you doing? Raising questions if you knew better than God. He further took that further and he said, God speaks to us in a way. He doesn't specify it more clearly. He said, God speaks once or twice by dreams. He opens the ears of men to give instruction. So if he can withdraw men from their wrong ways, keep their soul from the pit. And chastens them. So in a little way of the truth, he is not saying what they said, that God condemns them to Job and casts Job out because he's a sinner, and Job has been punished because he didn't say that. He did say that God has ways in which he chastens us, and says things to us by in a vision or by outer selfishness, to keep us in the wrong way. He chastens us also, pain upon his a man was chastened also with pain upon his bed, in verse 19. And the multitudes of bones with strong pain, and so on. So he didn't antagonize Job in the way that the brothers had done so. Made a few little other statements about God, which were pertinent as a preparation. In verse 34, in chapter 34, verse 16, he said, if now thou hast understanding, hear this. Hearken to the voice of my words, shall even he that hateth life govern? That's a pertinent remark. If you're a governor, you can't be governed on the basis of hating right and loving wrong. The idea of God, if God is God, he can't have built a world in which he hates the right and furthers the wrong. Yes, chaos. In the sacred of God, he is the governor of the universe. He governs to make the best universe he can. Oh, that's sort of a common sense remark. Is it fit to say to a king you are wicked, and the princes you are ungodly? That sometimes you do and you shouldn't work, but the idea is that the king is governing in the best way of his kingdom. It doesn't always work out like that, as we know. So he made that remark. And again, verse 22 of that same chapter, for God will not lay upon man more than right, that he should enter into relationship with God. But what God lays upon man is right for that man. That's a good remark too. So he's gradually saying some things to Job, which should counter his almost violent question. All he'd be taken through, that God will not lay upon a man more than he's right to have, so he shouldn't be in a position where he should talk to God about it, and enter into judgment with God about it. And that we should take it that a true governor is governing in the way which are right for those for whom he governs. At least we should say that of God. So he then said, therefore it is meet to be said to God, I avoid chastisement, I will not offend any more. So he takes the chastisement line rather than the punishment line, which is really the truth. It isn't really chastisement, it is perfection. Because we're leaving getting out of the wrong attitude, the negative attitude which they're carrying out there, to the positive attitude. Call it chastity with the light, but I think there's part of the process of perfection. Perfection is union. Stabilized union. That which I see not, teach thou me. If I have iniquity, I will do no more. That's the major part of what Elihu says, and it adds that much to what the others have put a little correction on. The best thing of all is God is greater than man. That shuts you up. Shouldn't you think of God as God as the author of the universe? That he authored it on the right side, not wrong? He didn't author it for chaos, but for harmony? Shouldn't you therefore take it that if he laid certain things upon man, he does it because that's exactly what suits the person in question? He also had picked this up, as you mentioned before, so I think this too, he came to be what Job said he missed. He wanted someone between them, who would kind of put their hands on both their shoulders and explain things between them, him and God, a day's man, a mediator. And Elihu speaks as the one who understood that this is what he was there to do. Behold, I am according to thy wish in God's stead. That's in 33:6. Behold, according to thy wish in God's stead, I also am called out of the clay. Another little phrase which has gone down to history, one of the phrases that is used at least in the English language. If there be a messenger within, it shall be one among a thousand, to show the man's righteousness. It's a phrase we use of a special person, special benefactor. That's 33:33. So that's come right into our common English phraseology, certain phrases that have come out of this book of Job. If there be a messenger with him, and an interpreter, one among a thousand, to show unto man his righteousness. Then he is gracious unto him, and says, deliver him from going down to the pit, I found the ransom. Some touch of a mediator, some touch of an intercessor. He is one among a thousand, and he is stepping, and you call on God to deliver him from destruction, and that he's in a sense providing a ransom. Though all these is work of God, oftentimes with man, to bring that his soul from the pit. That's the known lives Elijah took with Job. He did speak strongly in the end. And again, that's his right. In the 34th chapter, he again strikes at Job. He said, what man is that Job who drinketh up scorning like water? That's in verse 7. Then he says this, Job has spoken without knowledge, his words were without wisdom, my desire is that Job should be tried unto the end, because his answers are wicked men. For he is rebellion unto his sin. So he wants Job to have all the trial he should have, which can fit in for deliverance. Well, that's the only way. We respect each other. They don't take us all the way down in comparison to going all the way up. So again, we made a bold statement, and a statement which fits the facts. And his final word to Job, again, was good. In the last chapter of his talk, 37th chapter, and the 14th verse, "How can I do this, O Job, says to consider the wondrous works of God?" And he does actually see that chapter, he did touch a bit on God's manifestation of certain the wonders of nature. God puts it up in full force himself. And I should just give a little touch in that direction. So God is preparing Job for God's going to say to him. So that's about the gist of what he says. God's greater than man. If God is the ruler of the universe, you should take it for God. He's ruling rightly, not wrongly. And what he gives to each other, it suits our condition. You've spoken words out of turn, Job, which isn't, as I say, all the truth about Job, certainly not the basic truth about Job. And it's good that you should have what you need. Have some sprinkled on you until you're ready to get a right adjustment. And his final word now, says Job, if you have a little idea of some of the greatness of God, hearken unto this, stand still and consider the wondrous works of God. That ends the records of what man's had to say in these fiery trials of Job. What Job said about them, what these three men have said about them, and some summing up, and challenge, and call to Job to look up to God now, listen to what God has to say, from this young man who sat in quietly with them all through the time. Now, there remains what God says. The basis of what God says is quite plain. Faith must always be a leap beyond reason, although it may have a certain amount of help it. Which is accepting what it takes on its own values, on its own terms. Always is. So it's always a leap beyond the the certain. A thing may be available. A thing may be suitable. You cannot put it reliable. A thing is only proved reliable when you attach ourselves to it, and then in the attachment you prove its reliability. So faith is always a leap beyond reason. Reason to check it, a thing being available suitable, but cannot take it to the certain element is reliable. When God now speaks to Job, he makes no attempt to reason with Job. He speaks to him out of whirlwind, apparently. So now you listen to this, Job. You listen to who I am. That's all. You listen to who I am, then answer. He says, "You darken counsel by words without knowledge," because he had the counsel he saw previously at the beginning, he had it right. He darkened it by being caught up in the question of what he said, was God punishing, what was God meaning by it all, and so forth. legal for a simple case, to inadequate questioning, inadequate reasoning. So he might be replaced by adequate reasoning, she didn't have it now. All he said to Job is that. Listen to what I'm saying to you as a revelation of myself. And allow yourself out. Or I'm going to tell you who I am. You allow yourself up with that. These were the early days. Revelation hadn't yet come in the love of God expressed to us as it is in Christ. So there's no revelation of that type in this presentation of himself to Job. That is opened Job's eyes to the kind of person God is, evidenced by what he does. Line yourself up with that. Can you do that? Can you do this? If you can't, what's your question to me? If there's this and this and this and this being done around you, being done perfectly, in the harmonies of creation, why are you questioning me? Why don't you take and apply that for all ideas in the right harmony? That's the basis of this challenge. It comes out in a marvellous and often poetic declaration of God in his creation. It has great beauty in the sacred, but has constant challenge. It's constantly bringing up situations in creation which are obviously beyond the presence of man when they're created, or the power of man in fulfilling them. And he keeps asking Job, can you do this? Can you do that? And he starts from the creation, when he says, where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Declare thou hast understanding. Start there, where were you? When I laid the foundations of the earth. Whereas, which is added, that little statement, which is also his great favorite, and there's a little touch of the joy that is in the creation, and the goodness in the creation, which is going to come out in all his glory again one day, when the earth is filled with knowledge of the Lord, and the water covers the sea, and then the corruption of creation is removed. And that lovely phrase, when the morning stars sung together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. You know? That's a symbolic indication of the glory of the true universe of God to which it will be restored. As it says, this flaming earth is waiting for the manifestation of the sons of God that it may participate in the freedom of the redeemed family.
Please turn the tape over at this point.
He which puts in the practical situation, look at the sea. Could you bind the sea so as to have certain shores and limitations? There's verses 8 onwards. So it doesn't overflow and flood anything, so it keeps its place. Could you do that? And then he moves on to verse 10. He says, could you produce the wonderful dawn for the very spring? Beautiful tree, the very spring of an eye, especially because of Jesus. Look at the earlier, the freshness of the dawn. Could you be that to be? And when the light burns, he uses as the light shines and removes the high hidden point that people do things entirely secret that they shouldn't do. Could you do the other way? Can you open the gate to death? Can you handle death in its meaning? Do you know what it means? One great question mark that runs through history. What death? Do you find the answer in Jesus Christ? That's in verse 17. Do you know where light comes from? That's the great question of scientists today. What's light? Everything is light. We find out its speed, how it's operating. Scientists say, I believe everything really is some form of light. Which world is the world where light dwells? So it continues to ask things which are take man totally out of the abyss. After whatever it is now, 5,000 years, we're still out of the abyss. We're still feebly investigating around through the telescope and through the electronic microscope and so on, trying to find the from the tiniest particle up to the those things they have up there, what they call it, where the stars get together. What they all mean. They may have rather go because putting over the treasures of the snow, you get these different poetic terms. Have you seen the treasures of the hail? Can you produce this beautiful thing snow, a sparkle in the sun? That's in verse 22. It's the very rain that brings freshness by that drought and famine. Can you do that? Can you cause it to rain, he says in verse 26? Cause the rain of the wilderness for no man is, and bring the fruit into desolate ground? 27. I like the phrase, hath the rain a father? You get these perfect phrases, it's beautiful, for shooting you. 28. Hath the rain a father? What a simple, beautiful way of putting it. Are you the father of the rain? Ice? Out of whose womb did the ice come? Did you produce that one? Out of whose womb, is that a phrase? Some of the ice, and the hoary frost and curtain. Have you drunk of it? And we all know the beauty of the frost when you get these, get down in Washington these days when the ice freezes on the trees, every little branch sparkles. Did you do that? Then he turns it away from things of earth to things of heaven. He says, can you keep together that little group of stars for the Pleiades? That can be seen as a little group of the heavens. Could you hold those together? Verse 31 is one of the most standard points. The amateurs are great numbers about it, but the situation of the stars, the astronomy, the little group called the Pleiades. The sweet influence, I don't know why that phrase is particularly used, but very beautiful phrase. Canst thou bind the sweet influence of the Pleiades? Or could you loosen up that which calls Orion together? Orion is that great constellation you're in, like a man with a belt. And even one of its stars alone, Betelgeuse, a great central star, is about 1,000 times as big as the sun. Just one star. This great band which goes on in Orion. Any of you, of course, you hear during the tropics, it's a thrill to see the night sky in the tropics, with the southern cross shining. It's a curious light you get in these, and you can see the Orion there so often, and see these, just a few, I'm not an amateur, there's a few of the constellations you know, because we left the lost far behind, you know, and a glowing, beautiful glowing southern cross you get. Night after night when I was going down the Nile, I went about five times down the Nile on little pebble seen them on the crocodiles and whatnot. And it was a trip out in the mosquito trapping at night. And there you could see the beautiful tropical sky. Every star seemed to have an extra shadow about it. Can you do that? Can you handle the Zodiac. The word in the King James is Mezaroth. Catch that being forth in Mezaroth. Mezaroth is a zodiac. There are great reports, of course, about it in astrology about the zodiac. It was supposed to be in the aquatic age today or something like that. But all through history has been something about the zodiac. It seems to have been some silent outline of the gospel message. I'm not going to get ever. There may be much about astrology, which we don't think much about. There may not be much in it. There is something in the wise days of the East. Those days saw something in the star which died in the Bethlehem. I'm not telling you those things at length, but some may. But I'm not telling you there isn't something in the zodiac and the mysteries. I think they're able, if anyone's done it, to trace out the process of the gospel through the different sides of the zodiac. Here he mentions it. Can you bring forth a zodiac? Can you bind that great lumbering constellation called the Bear, the Great Bear? Trust my God, Arcturus, the good sun, that's the Great Bear. So then you put it on the spot. You handle this bad. Fetishism, elimination. He starts by the lie. He says, could you find a place for the lie? Verse 39. Could you think, you ever ask the young lion? Could you provide them with the necessary meat? Or, could you show the way, wouldn't you have to get the food for the young ones? So think to the bird, getting the food for the young ones. Lions won't get the food for themselves. Finding a prey. And we all know in the bird life how they spend their ages getting their different food for the young ones. And so the verse 31, could you provide a raising of the food for which his young ones cry to the God? He instances some of the sillier, wilder types of less known to us now, the breeding of the wild goats. Could you undertake how they bring their children into birth? The wild goats? Can you remember the months they fulfill? In other words, the months of pregnancy? Can you order that, the regular pregnancy of animals? Or could you handle a wild ass, a wild donkey? This is a very independent gentleman, the donkeys usually are, human as well as animal. Could you handle him? This is the independent fellow. His house is in the wilderness, the barren land is barren. He scorns the matron in the city. The guy is like the cry of the grabber, takes the notes of anybody. Lovely these touches, okay. The range of the mountains is his pasture, he searches for the green thing. The wild ox, the same, called the unicorn here. Yeah, animals, of course, are more the desert animals. That's verse 9. The wild donkey, the wild ass, is verse 5. That's chapter 39. Do you have any little touches? He says, could you produce the goodly wings of the peacock? I like that one, don't you? 13. Could you produce those wonderful colorings? They must do the goodly wings of the peacock. And then he kept the very opposite end. Could you produce that funny, curious animal called the ostrich, who goes and lays his eggs in sand, leaves the sand to go home and forget the eggs? And then he says, and it was God who deprived all wisdom. I like that one. God made him silly anyhow, so first of all. I like that touch, that's in verse 17. But God deprived the ostrich, because I didn't know ostrich did do that, actually. They didn't care about the young ones, hide the eggs in the sand, risk to be crushed, and look for sand back to the worm's hands as the incubator. And God has deprived me of wisdom. While the ostrich is lifted up as a very high, scorned with the horse and the rider. Have you seen that? The ostrich is there. In fact, here, carrying for nobody. very things are that beautiful, that little for sitting under a horse. It's worth reading that. I like the way it's really. It's amazingly poetic. The horse, well, we all feel the strength of the animal, that clean-cut animal. Humans always loved horses. There's great limbs, there's wonderful muscles. It's been special, that's how it's sculptured. But everybody admires the horse. We read that bit, verse 19. Hast thou given the horse strength? Hast thou closed his lip with thunder? You know, great curving lip. Hast thou made him afraid of the grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. You see the widening nostrils of the horse. He paweth the valley. He rejoiceth in his strength. He goeth out to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear. He's not frighted. Neither turneth he back from the sword. The quiver racketh against him. He gives him spear and shield. Then he swallows the ground with fierceness and rage. You see him thundering over in the charge. How helpless you are under the charge of a horse. Perhaps, he swallows the ground in the fierceness rage, neither believe he that it is the Sabbath of the Sabbath. He sat among the Sabbaths, ha-ha! He swears the battle of power, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. Isn't that some statement? Isn't that one of the greatest pieces of poetry written by Latin? Classical now, a presentation of a hyperbole, you know, where things are said in exaggerated form, make you struck home by this magnificent animal. Can you make that? Can you provide the hawk with a clear sighted eye, which can see right up at the looking down the ground, way up there? That the hawk fly by your wisdom, stretch its wings towards the south, that the eagle mount up at our command, that the hawk is soaring there to dive, and catch its prey in sharp eyes, this is magnificent eagle floating up and making its nest on the rocks. Can you do that? Verse 27, that let the eagle mount up, make her nest on high. That alone is enough for Job. And God stops short there. And he answers Job, said again, shall he that contend with the Almighty instruct him? You contend with me to instruct me? Could you bind the sea so it could have set the shore of limitation? There's verses 8 onwards. So it doesn't overflow and cut anything, so it keeps its place. Could you do that? And then he leaves that verse 12. Could you produce the wonderful dawn for the ghost too? Beautiful praise, the very things of an eye, says in the court of Jesus. But the earlier, the freshness of the dawn. Could you bring that to me? And when the light dawns, he uses it, the light shines, and he moves the house, different colors that people do, things in secret that they shouldn't do. Could you do it the other way? Can you open the gate to death? Can you handle death in its meaning? Do you have a meaning? One great question mark and one thing is the doctor, so you find the answer in Jesus Christ. That's in verse 17. Do you know where light comes from? That's the great question of power of the day. What's light? Everything's light. The fire has its speed, how it operates, and fire has its fire, and you know, really, some form of light. Which way is the way of light today? So continue asking, take me, after whatever it is now, 5,000 years, they're still after this. They're still feebly investigating around, seeing the field telescope and seeing the electronic microscope and so on, trying to find the tiniest particle up to the thing they have occurred up before, and then the stars get together. What they all mean. Had you entered the treasures of the snow? And he gets into the perfect terms. Can you see the treasures of the hay? Can you produce this beautiful thing slow, as sparkling as the sun? That's in verse 22. There's a very rain that brings tested by that doubt and cunning. Can you do that? Can you perfectly rain this into verse 26? A cause the rain of the wilderness of all thy name, and bring up in the children to rest it round? 77. I love the place, has to know the Father. You've got these perfect places, it's a beautiful, for shooting you. 28. Has to know the Father? And I said the beautiful way of putting it. Are you the Father away? House? Out of whose womb did the ice come? Could you produce that then? Out of his womb, is that the phrase? Come with the eyes. And the whole is cross, the certain he has given it. And we all know the beauty of the cross when you get these. And it goes down in Washington these days, and the ice freezes on the trees, and every little branch sparkles. Did you hear that? They turned it away from things of earth to things of heaven. Because can you keep together that because with the stars for the paradise, there can be things that are deep in the heavens. Could you hold those together? Verse 31? it's not the first time that the parents of the Abbot of the great men back about it, the truth influence, I don't know why that phrase is particularly, the very difficult thing. Transfer band is speak influence the party. Or could you just wrap up and say the line together? Around that great constellation of them, like a man in a boat. And even one of its stars alone, Bethel Girl, a great star, is about 1,000 times as big as the sun. This one star. This great dawn, this great unknown Orion. And you hear, of course, you go here, during the tropics, it's a thrill to see the night sky in the tropics, with the cousin cross shining. It's a curious light to get in these, and you can see the Orion there, often, and see these, there's a few constellations, you know, because we've left the north star behind, you know, and it's very visible, very cousin cross you get. Night after night, when I stay down the Nile, I went about 5 times down the Nile, and a little petal seen them on the crocodiles and whatnot. And you used to sit out in the mosquito cabin at night. And there you could see this beautiful tropical sky. Every star seemed to have an extra shadow on it. Can you do that? Can you handle the, Zodiac. The word in the King James is Nazareth. Such a being called Nazareth is a Zodiac. They do talk to us about it, it's a story about Zodiac. It's supposed to be in the Aquatic Age today or something like it. So all the history has been talking about the Zodiac. It seems to have been some silent outline of the Gospel message. I'm not going to say that ever. There may be much about astrology, which we don't think much about. There may not be much in it. Something in the wise age of the East. There's something in the stars guiding the Bethlehem. Those things at length have come known. And I'm not saying there isn't something in the zodiac and the message of the zodiac. I think we're able, if only we've done it, to trace out the process of the gospel. See the different types of zodiac. Can you bring forth a zodiac? Can you bow that great lumbering constellation called the Bear, the Great Bear? Because I got up first with his son, that's the Great Bear. So again, you put him on his spot. You handle this marvelous array? Can you move about and lift up one and pack up another? And arrange the zodiac for this purpose? Then we move on to animal life. Just a few touches from animal nature. He starts by the lion. Could you try to praise the lion? Verse 39. Could you think, you ever ask the young lion? Could you provide him with the meat? Or could you show the world how to get the food for the young ones? So this is the bird getting the food for the young ones. Lions are getting food for themselves. Time we are praying. And we all know the bird life, how they spend their ages getting their different food for the young ones. And so the verse 41 could say, can you provide the raising of the food to which these young ones cry to God? He introduced some of the silly, wilder types of less known to us now, the breeding of the wild goats. Could you understand how they bring their children, how they bring their new ones into birth? The wild goats? Can you remember the months they fulfilled? In other words, what's the pregnancy? Can you order that to the regular pregnancy of animals? Or could you have in the wild ass, the wild donkey? The very independent gentleman, the donkey is easy to ask, human as well as enemy. Could you handle him, this independent fellow? And he fights in the wilderness, the barren land is barren, he scorns the masters in the city. He gathers up the cry of a driver, taking notes of anybody. That is his country, that man. The range of the mountains is his pasture, his secretary of the green thing. The wild, the ox, the same, called the unicorn here. The animals, of course, are more the desert animals. That's verse 9. The wild donkey, the wild ass is verse 5. Chapter 39. So he has all these touches. He says, could you produce the dignity of the peacock? I like that one, isn't he? 13. Could you produce those wonderful colorings? They must do the good things of the peacock. And then he kept the very opposite end. Could you produce that funny, careless animal called the ostrich, who goes lazy things in times, leaves the sand to go over and forget the eggs? And then he says, and it was God who deprived their wisdom. I like that one. God made him silly anyhow, that's his fault. I like that touch, that's in verse 17. God deprived the ostriches. I didn't know ostriches did do that, actually. He didn't say about a young man, hide the eggs in the turn, risk to be crushed, and get the sand out to the warm sand, as the incubator. And God deprived the wisdom. Why should I, the ostrich, he's lifted up as a man high, scorned the horse and the ground. Have you seen that? Good ostrich is a good chap here, trying for nobody. So you think of that beautiful, that miracle sitting under the horse. It's worth reading that. Or that could have seen. It smells of poetic. The horse, they we all feel the strength of the animal, that clean-cut animal. We've all, ever, seen has always loved horses. There's great limbs, there's wonderful muscles. It's special, like something sculptured. It's everybody admires the horse. We read that, it's verse 19. Hast thou given the horse strength? Hast thou crazed his neck with thunder? You know, they curve his neck. Hast thou make him afraid of the grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. You see the widening nostrils of the horse. He paweth the valley. He gives it his strength. He goeth unto meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear. He's unfighted. Neither turneth he back from the sword. The quiver rattleth against him. The glittering spear and the shield. Then he swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage. You see him thundering over in the charge. How helpless you are under the charge of a horse. Perhaps, he followeth the ground in the fierceness of rage. Neither believeth he that it is the saddle or something. He set among the saddles, ha ha! He swelleth the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. Isn't that fantastic? Isn't that one of the greatest pieces of poetry written, I reckon? Classic remark, presentation of hyperbole, you know, many things are said in exaggerated form, making it struck home by this magnificent animal. Can you get that? Can you provide the hawk with a clear sighted eye, which can see right up and see things moving down the ground, way up there? Let the hawk fly by your wisdom, stretch its wings towards the south, with the eagle mount up at our command, that the hawk is soaring there to dive, and catch its prey in sharp eyes, it is magnificent eagle, floating up and making its nest on the rocks. Can you do that? Verse 27, let the eagle mount up, make a nest on high. That alone is enough for Job. And God stopped short there. And he answered Job, said again, shall he that could promise to be almighty instruct him? You contend with me, can you instruct me? Can you teach me how to do this and this and this and this and this? and did unto them. He said, he lived in the knowledge of God, and in the ignorance of man. For whom I desire, what shall I answer thee? I lay my hand upon my mouth. Chapter 14, verse 3. Once have I spoken, thy will have answered, and twice I will proceed no further. By thy first glimpse of the helplessness, the ignorance of man, not quite yet the helplessness, the ignorance of man, and no nothingness of man. How do you find it? Describe how God does things, and how many, then nothing. Can you do any of these things? Is that a tremendous presentation to nature? Or is it my nature a tremendous presentation? Is it beautiful, marvelous, wonderful, gorgeous? Each of those things, you can't touch that up. God does the lot. He had one more final blow to Job's humanity, not to Job's Holy Spirit center, but to his soul reaction, his humanity, and that's the powerlessness. He just with his two simple examples of the animal power. He's put all this on wisdom so far, the intricacy of wisdom which can make these things what they are. Now, it's a the power of the animals, it seems to be that. And he puts out the hippopotamus. That's if it is hard day, then I'll pick out the elephant. And that's going to beat him off. It does say the elephant margin, but it speaks about this animal as the shady trees covering in their shadow and the willows of the book compassing them about. He doesn't care about water, he doesn't do all that with water. It's just what an elephant does. A hippopotamus does, doesn't matter which. Anyhow, it's an enormous animal. Look at his bones, it says. His bones are strong as like pieces of glass. This is verse 15 onwards in chapter 14. Similarly, it's framed up together. His bones are glass. His bones are bars of iron. And these great, pondering, powerful animals, what do you do with them? I took in my life one day, because I was not keeping the hippopotamus, but I knew one was in the river. I forgot these bars, these bones like iron. I shot him. But the bullet bounced off. So it's amazing. That's my trouble. And that old brother stayed in the middle of that stream, which is about 200 yards broad, all day, cutting his head up. I couldn't pass him to get back. I had little canoe. I couldn't get past. I didn't dare. I said, he might say, I'm unmired if possible. And so I lay on an old trunk, keeping the ants off, the outside old trunks, keeping the ants off. All day I lay there. And then evening time came, I took a chance off and said, I slipped back to me by and I said, you're asking for a government. The reason why I shot a hippopotamus is to meet the Africans. They love hippopotamus, they put the meat on it too. So I didn't get my pay for the Africans on the face. I saved my life and beat them off. I think they're mighty animals anyhow. They're mild animals. Big grass, it says so here. They're not carnivores. Verse 15, each grass like an ox. He's slow moving, not all that slow. He's amphibious. He lives in the water, lives on the land. You find him on both. He knows how far in the land. He is, he says he had the shade of the trees in the marshland, that's where you find him, or just in the rivers. School bubble, of course. But they're very harmless. You don't bother in a hippopotamus, except if the Africans would meet. They would fix up otherwise the fiercest of animals. If you don't play with the crocodile. So let's say this example of the power of the physical makeup of these huge animals and the philosophy If the guy lives to his wife, keep out of his way, you know, cock her back. And he plays about with that, he says, this is verse 41, chapter 41. Can you put a hook in his nose? Or boys chip your feet with a thorn? Come on, that. I like it, the idea of verse 5. Will you pay with it with a bird? Will you have a pet crocodile? If you bandage your daughter, they said that he's Schneider, and that's a crocodile. It's quite different. He says, you watch him. He says, because he's no man so fierce. That's the way they are, fierce, but it's a... they won't be stirring up a fire, they need to stir you up, they get a chance. The only way we knew how to handle crocodiles is crocodiles won't come where there's running water, where there's a waterfall. So my wife and I, Paulie, you see, sipping in the hot days in this river under a little waterfall, that the crocodiles out here wouldn't come, so you're safe. You can miss a plane of them like a bird, so we don't worry about them. Who then stand before him? And so he uses those phrases, verse 14, who can open the doors of his face? His teeth are terrible round about. His tails are, as his cloud, shut up so nothing can get between them. They join like one to another, stick together to tear the sunder. It goes on almost as if he speaks of the mythical dragon. He's saying a dragon, there's sparks come out of it. Maybe that was just a, I don't know how terrible it is, it's a Satan. He speaks of the sparks came from him, so I'm like the old mythical dragon idea, of course, I don't know such animals as far as we know. And so he goes on to this chapter, presenting the huge strength of the elephant, the hippopotamus, and the fierceness of the ferocity of the crocodile. That ends it. That is Gilboa. This outpouring, I suppose it came in some form of vision, whether it is spoken verbally to me, I don't know, but it's a marvelous presentation. Now then something happened. Job had seen, he hadn't got the touch. Now he's seen, the answer isn't in my knowledge or my strength. To the last seen, the helplessness of self. In its relationship as independent, that this had come home to now. And so now he speaks again in the last chapter to God. And Job answered the Lord, I know thou canst do anything, and no thought can be withheld upon thee. Here I'm teaching, now I speak. Now verse 5. Now, here's it. Silent in the dawning risen, the dawning is spirit, the full sunlight is spirit. I've heard of thee, but I hear you in my ear, now mine eye seeth thee. That's it. So now he is in seeing dreaming always. You only see it for one day. Now I see. Now I'm with you in what you are. Oh, this is it. I'm with this wonderful God. It is wonderful wisdom, wonderful power. The details of untold duties and controls and definition. I wonder if I see him now. He's not some distant creator figure to me. He's the one with whom I come into inner sight. Is the inner union, because it was my idea to not open the inner union. Now that is the transformation game, because you live in the liberty of sin or death to become united. Now he moves away to sit in his body in this, the red lady in the spirit too. Now it turns. The same way in body ailments. Why? Because he's given this and this and this. Now he's filled up with the glory and the truth. The he and God are together in what is we take our language in this union of the church. He is just a means of his God is showing what is this and showing what is glory. And God has kept in this way bring him to the final end of him. A separated self-object, a separated self-object. A separated self-object, he saw what could happen to me. I don't want this to happen. I would like this to happen. I want to learn like this. Separated self, it's still the independent self, the core. A separated self, will want what it wants, sometimes the void that it wants to avoid. It's public, it can't do that. So although there wasn't a separated self in the United States, he didn't know who he really was. So all the book of Job is concerned to Job who he really was. Just come back to one, the Lord gave, the Lord took it away. This is the name of the Lord. You say, if the Lord sends him to Job, why can't he also take it away? Now he's back there. So, I'm no longer a separated person. Loving it, living a life under my own plans or pleasures or ambitions or gains. I'm a very pretty new person. I'm a form of God, and my place in life is to manifest the people with the love and beauty and power and presence of God, and the availability of God's love and grace to all men. Now, lift it out. Into freedom from self-questioning, self-pitying, self-condemnation, freedom. So it said, my mind changed. Since I abhor myself, I repent. The pain is with your mind. I repent. I dropped this because I did need something or have something. No. I'm fully yours now. I'm fully your man. No ages. That shows the world what you want to show the world. Now, of course, liberty and joy are facts. It's a gift. Self-pity. Alienation disturbs. And the element gave a vision is a self-pity and the nice in the self-liberty, the freedom, the joy, the various elements. Now this is moved over to the brothers, the things. Apparently they had a local separation. Because in verse 7, after all said to Job, which meant probably the atmosphere of sins, they'd least heard something happening with Job, thank you God, saying, looking to one of the Lord, occupied it, it seems allowed to be a Lord's servant, and this is just a Job, what happened? Because it says after Job is taken, then he's taken to the sins. Now the likelihood that the sins don't are far off, because they've just been having this controversy, and probably just separated, like you do separate, you know, a little trouble between you. And the voice came to the sins. Well, the first heard God's voice too. So it says the Lord spoke to the sins, to Eliphaz and the others. That could have been again, and in a tradition, well, yes, we see, he knocked up that three states of Job. He's been wrong somewhere. He had the wrong thing here. He's been saying things he shouldn't say. So whether it came from direct word in the missing the same, or whether it came to the message, change up the same, the answer. Anyhow, its result was that they must have what they had. You have not spoken to me, the thing is right, verse 7, as my servant Job had. Well, Job hadn't looked at me like me, from God. So in other words, Job, what is that? You better give up Job's God. You haven't given up what Job's God. So you see, come on now, come on. And it's just come up to Job now. So he says to me, verse 7, But I could go. And it makes sure that they didn't obey the recognition of God's grace and by sacrifice and so on, that we could meet God through sacrifice if they didn't obey. But they could go. Now Job was praised because I accept Job. Job was hardly busy to pray for them to have something. He was far more occupied getting to what he got, which was acceptance. So that's the prayer you get from Job. I accept Job. So here, if I accept Job, by Job he says it. He says, so here that I accept, in the verse 8, and the Lord accepted Job. That's not. Accepted Job, really. I said, no, it's okay with God, I understand that. That is his prayer. The prayer is the building. It's the prayer of faith. He said, come on now, let's do together these things. You got free from wrong attitudes yourself. You're not busy looking at the wrong attitudes of other folks. You're busy telling them they're free. And they're busy receiving their own too. Come on, let's have the freedom. The freedom, because anyhow, if they shall sacrifice, they really won't go there. So if they pray together, the prayer is love, fellowship, and acceptance, and transition. There's some acceptance. And there it says in verse 10, the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prays and says, Job was never captive to any household. He wasn't captive to his body, he was captive to his spirit. The captivity of Job is not captivity. The captivity is wrong attitude. Questioning and doubting and of God and law, that is his captivity. And the Lord turned the captivity, because when you transmit it, when you externalize it because of you, and the same thing is, long after, Paul says, if you confess your mouth to the Lord, you have salvation. If you believe in your heart, you have justification. Justification is God saying, in my sight, you're right. You do have your heart. You can say, well, God, I trusted Jesus, and God's righteousness is God's country righteous. So, God's country righteous. That's in my heart. Confession is your salvation. Confession objectifies something. That is objectifies Christ being real. So you don't get the liberation of salvation, but you confess Christ and then believe immediately. Evidently, this is a fact. And I think there are many in our churches like that. We have had the gospel, and inwardly, and maybe they like to take the Holy Communion and whatnot, they have a joy, a liberty with it. And they said, well, this is the way God provided, and since then I'm accepted. And therefore, they believe in their heart and righteousness, and in God's heart they accept it. But they haven't got that which liberates the brothers. Then they move into confession, which doesn't mean just sin, which means they confess the mouth of the Lord Jesus to other people, because that's a high thing. But the objective of the thing has a weaker touch, and of course the people realize it is justified. So as he affirms his freedom to the brothers and with the brothers, and they forget the gospel to them, his captivity is gone. Ah, it's so it is captivity, because that's what the captivity is. Now the household has changed. So the only man becomes a happy family man. The household has changed. Instead of, I reckon that he's getting healed too. I reckon when you're sick, it's the body that's coming too. Because it says that all the family began together. His brothers and sisters came, our church and businesses, and ate bread with him. There's no difference to eat bread with a man full of boils. Luckily, he had less boils, I think probably, he's asked me, that's probably. Because there was company, fellowship, freedom, fun, joy. This was something new. So what drew the brethren? Wasn't it poor, so sick, and dead in their ashes? It was Joe James' favorite ashes of and sitting on rich treasure that the President caused in his love and his beauty and his power and his goodness. This is what he a judge to praise the Lord, see what he's doing, and let this see what he's doing, and move their hearts. To comfort him, or to comfort him in drink, the other way, share their love with him. I think perhaps there is something in them, if you know. But there's this color, this flow. Still, contaminate having to be again. It has ultimate effect on his family life. Always, I say, have that way, but has a vast increase of his prosperity. And that's got the camels and horses and the large family. He had 7 sons more, didn't he? And 4 daughters, and 3 daughters. So, his wife, I believe he only had 1. She already had at least 6 grandsons. She didn't do that. This time again, had 7 more. So bless her. And the 3 daughters. and they were beautiful girls. Of all girls are beautiful, aren't they? And it says that no women were found so fair as in 6 country North Morgan. As in the house of the girl. and they were blessed. And Job lived 140 years. Died old and full of days. So that's the lesson of Job, that by all means, he takes us all that way. This is the permanent way. By all means, he uses evil. And actually, you see here, sometimes there's a verse parked off, and things are happening to us. But has the impact of evil. Only by that peace can we come into unified outlook, which can force us to say it isn't only the good from God, it's all from God. The unified outlook becomes a unified permanent condition. This is the union. When you settle into it, the eternal shadow, birth, and you're settled into a unified condition. Now it's the permanent condition. Oh, this is God. You're not going to run around yourself. You've got the power. You've got the self now. But God's agent produces his comfort and joy and blessing and fulfillment. And it's just a sheer attention. Self, because we're here in a tempted world. And we don't meet with the world. We're in a situation. We have those 2 temptations. We don't live fussing about temptation. We're the true people. In God's freedom. In God's joy. If you realize that it is really, it is perfect God, it is I'm in the genius, he's the real person, and now he's contributing to a few brothers. I'm occupied by other people getting what I've got. Yes, right. Well, I haven't, there's another thing you have to say on Job. I thought it would be a bit shorter. Yes. So he said, it's that concern to me is something to protect you, when I'm speaking it out, or acting it out. He's speaking about what Moses originally spoke about, and I said yesterday in Deuteronomy, the word is in our mouth and our heart. The word of faith, if we keep the word, includes Christ as well, the word of faith can only be only Christ in truth. It's the word of faith. It's there already, of course, there already. And you're only, you're not, it's the truth is first that. You don't pull him down from above, or pull him up from beneath. This is, I'll look at it now, it's the 10th chapter. Romans 10 and 9. But Moses described the righteousness and so on, and that's very righteous. The righteousness of the faith, keep it on his side, actually, is Moses' faith.